Hello there, and welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily here on this Friday in Berea. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl. The Browns last night took on the Atlanta Falcons in the second preseason game of the Hugh Jackson era, falling 24-13. But I think there was a lot of good, but there was also a lot of bad. We'll talk about all of that and more, but let's just start right with it, Matt Wilhelm. And by the way, we want to hear from you guys today. This is a day to react to what we just saw there at First Energy Stadium. And I have my reactions. You're certainly going to get those. But today is the day to call us up, 216-578-0850. Our Ohio Business Machine hot topics we want to hear from you on. What did you like? What didn't you like? RG3, TP. And, of course, what you think, and we'll give our takeaways from last night. We'll hear from Hugh Jackson. We'll hear from RG3. We'll hear from Sir Andrew Gribble as well. But let's start with you, Matt Wilhelm. Last night, 24-13, but at halftime, when the first team left the field, 13-10 Browns. What did you see last night? What jumped out at you?
A couple things jumped out in a very, very good way, and a couple things jumped out in a bad way. And I'll start with the good first. And it's just multiple things. RG3 took the incremental step that we asked for him to take after 6 days ago playing in Green Bay, took that step. I love the fact that Hugh kind of got into his game plan and then took his shot instead of coming right out of the gates as we did in Green Bay to take his shot. I love that RG3 time and time again, and I watched the game again this morning, the TV version, and I'd go back and watch, you know, fast forward, you know, thank goodness I have DVR, to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I even think, and the one thing that, even though he threw the touchdown to Barnage, you know, on the wheel route, and he threw the touchdown to TP down the sideline, is the play that stands out to me that shows the progress that RG3 has made is actually the 10-yard reception, I think on 2nd and 10, to Hollywood Higgins. Because he starts right, and he goes 1-2-3 quickly. He goes boom, 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 not there. Takes a glance back and rifles the ball of Hollywood Higgins. Higgins falls forward, you know, at the sticks, moves the chains first down. So that's one thing that really stood out to me is you've got to love his ability to throw the deep ball, and he's making good decisions underneath. He's not reckless with the football. And I can't even say that pick in Green Bay was all that reckless. It was just two guys that just need more reps together, and they don't quite understand or finish each other's sentence per se when it comes to this offense. Second thing is, I loved the way the offensive line got a push and the way Isaiah Crowell ran the football. And the one cut that he made for his, 17-yard gain or whatever that was,
the long run,
was essentially the same cut that Devontae Freeman made on his touchdown. Devontae Freeman's just happened to happen on the edge with Justin Gilbert miss. And Isaiah Crowell's, you know, cut was essentially back to the middle of the defense where there's multiple hats on the second level to basically bring him down to the ground after a chunk run. But almost running again so powerful, expecting contact on one that was like a 7-yard, you know, it was like a tumbling 7-yard run because he like fell down.
Vintage.
You know, that was 2014 Isaiah Crowell. So all in all, you've got to love the offense. You've got to love the fact that they score the football. That is something that we've heard since Hugh Jackson took this job, since he drafted a bunch of players. Corey Coleman, obviously being a guy who can score the football very well, not in uniform last night. And I'll go to the bad. The bad is, collectively, the Ray Horton scheme and everyone that plays defense gave up over 400 yards of total offense. And what I didn't like, and I went back and watched it this morning, was the ability of the Atlanta Falcons to run the ball almost at will. It was, we'd have a, you know, 1-yard gain, and then they'd go for 5, then they'd go for 11. And I pointed it out last night on the postgame show, but if you take away RG3's 2 rushes, while I know that's part of our game plan and why you'll love the athleticism of RG3, you take those 2 away, and you look at Isaiah Crowell's 1 chunk run, and then you go to the other side, look at the Atlanta Falcons' long runs, 26, 17, 15, 11, it was like chunk, 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 chunk. And what that says to me is 2 things, and it's something that I've preached about this system, is guys not doing their job, guys not getting in their gaps, and it leaves the people on the back end guessing and trying to make everybody else right. Well, those guys get paid too. Devontae Freeman gets paid to make people miss, and it's just not good enough. And I wouldn't be surprised I'll take notice, but it's like the defensive guys should be in meetings for a long time this morning because it was not good enough. And I think that Hugh Jackson and Ray Horton have to have a long discussion throughout today, tomorrow, and potentially on their flight on Monday to get things right and figure it out for that live-ish practice against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then again on that Friday.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at the facts here in this game. The Atlanta Falcons, 498 total yards for the second straight game. The defense was on the field for basically 40 minutes. The offense, only 20 minutes. They had 498 total yards. They ran for 224 yards on 5.5 yards per carry. Now, they only had 78 yards rushing in the first half. So you do the math really quickly. They're at about 150 in the second. This was a game where we'll focus here, and then I'll get to the good. The bad was the run defense again, and you and I both were of the belief that it was going to be better this year.
I agree.
And I thought it would be. What scared me the most about the run defense was the constant nature of it, the chunk runs that were given up. You alluded to those earlier. The longest runs on the day, B. Wild's left end, 32 yards, touchdown. 19 yards, Devontae Freeman, right tackle, touchdown. Gus Johnson, left guard, 17 yards. They had three guys who broke off chunk runs in this game. Three different guys. This was happening all game long. And what really struck me was the beginning of the second half, we were out there with Hayden, Shelton, and Meter against their backups, their third string at that point, and they were still running the ball down the Browns' throat. And that was very concerning to me. I don't know what needs to be done about it. I'm not seeing Danny Shelton was my spotlight guy. I'm still not seeing him ever go forward.
Correct.
I'm seeing him stand up, or I'm seeing him get washed laterally.
And you know what I notice? And if I have an opportunity to talk to anybody in this building that is willing to listen, the one thing that I notice, and it's simply watching, it's playing against Casey Hampton, because he was in the era of Pittsburgh Steelers football when Jamal Williams and I was playing with the San Diego Chargers in the AFC. And Vince Wilfork. Now, Vince Wilfork's a little bit different, you know, I think, than Casey Hampton and Jamal Williams and even Danny Shelton for that case, where he was darn near 400 pounds sitting in the middle of your defense, right? But the one thing that Casey Hampton and Jamal Williams did very well that I'm not seeing out of Danny Shelton at this point is their knuckles were white, which means they had a forward lean to their stance, so they got off and penetrated.
Last year,
they penetrated, and then they get into the offensive guy, and then they can play their gap, they can shed, they can force that guy back into the backfield. And what I find Danny Shelton doing is Danny Shelton's sitting in his stance a little too much. The weight is on his feet and in his heels, so he gets off on the football, but he's almost taking that blocker on and then having to press instead of getting off on the football into a press and figuring it out on the run. Instead of, it's like, he's like buying himself a little bit of time to figure out what he's going to do and how he's going to get off a block.
Yeah, I noticed that what he would do a lot of times was stand up and then wait to read where the play was going and then try to shed.
It's too late.
As opposed to getting in there and block and just get in there and penetrate. We're not seeing the penetration, something we knew last year. And I think, and again, we've got to see that happen going forward. So the big concern was the run defense. And since you guys always say I get just too excited, I'll start with the concern. Run defense, I thought my man Tracy Howard struggled in coverage. I thought the coverage in general at times was good, but also at times rough.
And to watch that again, and I watched just the first half this morning, and I would go back and watch things again. But what you know what I noticed, and if all of you want to go back and watch, there was no urgency in our defensive backs, other than maybe the first series of the game, to get lined up and across from whoever they're going to guard.
There was some
and drop their hips. Guys were standing too straight, walking around, jogging out to the slot, jogging out to their wide receiver, and then on the snap of the ball, they'd get into that low DB stance and into their pedal. So, and I think, and a couple times on some of those underneath routes, the crossing routes where Howard got hit multiple times, he was just a little straight-legged at the snap of the ball and not ready to play. And that's something that's got to be fixed. And I think if I were, you know, Louis Chofi or I were Ray Horton, that's what I'm harping on all day today. Get ready to play.
Get ready to play. I thought that there was also, you know, those crossing routes I thought were brutal on us all game long. Thought they were brutal. One guy who stood out to me, was flying around the field, was Derek Kindred, the strong safety, the rookie. Thought he was involved quite a bit. I thought that Justin Gilbert, not great against the run, but I thought he was good in coverage. And the penalty on him I thought was a horrible call.
Yes.
That was so far away from the play. He had cut the guy's route off and was just leaning him and had nothing to do with anything, which would have been another sack for Nassib. The good on defense, Carl Nassib. Carl Nassib continues to make plays. He is nasty. He is relentless. I thought that Tank Carter had a good game. I thought Christian Kirksey made some nice plays as well. But I love seeing Carl Nassib get after the quarterback.
And Carl Nassib, I agree. The guy's got a motor. He brings it. And who knows? He doesn't care whether it's one snap or 10 snaps. He's going to go full bore. And then he'll raise his hand and tap out to come off the field. The one thing that I noticed, and it was more so towards, it was that last drive when I think Schaub went 7-for-7 and they end up getting down inside the 10. The penalty backed them out when they scored the touchdown. They end up kicking a field goal. Is, for whatever reason, we got Nassib into a three technique, you know, down on a guard. And I know you in that situation you want to use his athleticism, but when the Atlanta Falcons ran the football and he got a big on big, Carl Nassib could not get off a block and in some cases was 2 yards deep and getting driven off the football.
And that's where, when he's going to play that, he needs to put on a little bit of
bulk.
And that's something that the Browns certainly have talked about. And again, he wasn't a guy that was going to be forcing a roll, but he certainly is earning one with his ability to get to the quarterback. Now for the good. We're going to be fun to watch. We are going to score the football. I'm not going to make any claims right now on us how many points we're going to give up or how often we're going to stop the other team. But when we have the ball, it's going to be exciting. We will score the football. There will be big plays. I think the development of Terrell Pryor is one of the more remarkable stories in the National Football League. From where he was at that joint practice against the Buffalo Bills to where he is now, that's Desmond Trufant he's beaten. He beat Sam Shields last week. These are legitimate corners in the National Football League. Veteran corners. A veteran who have been very successful at their position. He excites me. RG3 with the deep ball. The ground game got going. I thought the line looked very good, even without Joe Thomas out there, which, you know, is only going to be an accoutrement, a betterment of this offensive line when he is out there, the 9-time Pro Bowler. I thought that this offense showed a lot. And by the way, Corey Coleman wasn't on the field. Josh Gordon wasn't on the field. Just wait until Terrell Pryor's the third receiver that teams are worried about on the field. I think it's going to be very exciting on offense. RG3, 6 of 8, 96 yards, 2 touchdowns, ran for 36 yards, showed everything you wanted to see. Now, again, Cam Irving, the two guys in the middle, I talked about it going in that game. Cam Irving, you can't have that snap over his head like that. You can't have that. It can't happen.
That's high school stuff.
You can't have Malcolm Johnson slide over to pick up a defensive end and whiff completely and get RG3 just almost enveloped. That can't happen. So there are things still to clean up. But overall, 4 possessions for the offense. Big plays. And I've said all along, we're not going to be a grinded-out offense. We're going to be a big-play offense. Now, on the drive where you hit the 50-yarder to Pryor, there was a little bit of grinding out.
Leading
you're running
up to it,
yeah. And that set that up,
sure.
The big bomb there. Now, you go back to Week 17 against Pittsburgh, and I pointed this out to Pryor. That game was his first game at receiver, caught the 40-yard bomb against the Steelers. Then he's got a 49-yarder against the Packers, a 50-yarder. This guy's made a big play every time he's been on the field in the NFL as a wide receiver. So he's obviously, it's early, it's in its infancy, but there's something to what he has done, and I'm excited. I think offensively, this is going to be the best offense we've had since 2007. I think that there are a lot of things that need to be improved on the defensive side of the ball. Don't get me wrong. It looks to me right now like it's going to be when First Energy Stadium, might as well call it the OK Corral. There are going to be a lot of shootouts. That's how it looks right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully things can get cleaned up a little bit on the defense. But offensively, I am very excited about where this team is at. I love the step forward with Robert Griffin III. The pass to Barnage was as pretty a ball as you'll see. And I didn't know if Barnage had the jets. I didn't know if he had that extra gear to get out there. Fingertip catch, beautiful catch. But that was really everything we wanted to see from the offense. And, you know, the first drive, you come out, Crow gets 8 yards, I believe it was on first down.
Yeah.
You don't want to have that stalled out. They tried that screen, it got blown up, and then all of a sudden they were out of there. But I love the aggressiveness when they went for it on fourth down, and Duke Johnson converted it before the touchdown to Barnett.
Tough 2 yards as well.
Tough 2 yards. I like the way that this is going right now on the offensive side of the football. I like the way that they're utilizing RG3. I think that our line seems to do very well with those shotgun inside handoffs and the read option kind of out of it.
Sure.
Because they got him flowing one way with the success, and then he finally kept it. He could have run for forever.
Correct. And the cool thing about that is, conceptually, as the offensive line blocks it, they don't care whether RG3 is under the center or in the gun running the same principle. And that's what's great about being able to have an athletic quarterback who can run that zone read. And just as we talk about, you know, showing a fake or showing a formation, as we saw, you know, Hugh Jackson come out and kind of like that, you know, the wide trips on each side with the core being intact. It's, you want to put that on tape? So the teams have to spend a lot of time preparing for both RG3 under the center, you know, running some type of zone play or power scheme, and then also the zone read, the read option, you know, and there's so much off of it too. There's the shovel pass that can come, the option shovel pass, so it's like a dual option. There's so many things you can do it. I mean, I love where we're headed offensively. I really do. And we're doing this handicapped, meaning without Corey Coleman, without Josh Gordon.
I agree. Now, here's a stat that I'm going to throw out that is staggering that, again, to me, shows the problem. Cleveland Browns quarterbacks combined for 18 pass attempts, and the team combined for 20 rush attempts. So that's 38 plays of record, right? Throw in two sacks. So that's 40 plays of record. The Atlanta Falcons had 41 rushes. They had 36 pass attempts, two sacks, 38 passes. 38 and 41, my calculations, 79.
Yeah, but the 40 for us. I mean, but how much has to do with our big play ability?
Some of it has to do that. Yes, there is something to be said for the big play ability of it. You're correct. Yards per play, though, 6.3 for the Atlanta Falcons, 6.1 for the Cleveland Browns. Right. Plays 79 to 40. 79 to 40. First downs, 31 to 12. 31 to 12. They were 11 of 17 on third down, 1 of 1 on fourth down. So they had as many conversions as we had first downs in the game. The defense needs to pick it up, but this offense is going to be fun. And if you were to ask me, and maybe it's just because those people who used to watch me play hoops in high school know, I'm an offensive guy. Got no problem saying, I know you're a defensive guy, so yeah, it's probably a little bit different for you. But I'm an offensive guy. I want to see a good offense. I believe we are going to have a very, very good offense this year. I'm concerned about the defense, though, and we need to see some drastic improvement, I think, next week in Tampa, which will be another good test. Doug Martin, one of the top running backs in the National Football League last year. We got to see what he will do. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. We got a lot of people on the line, 216-578-0850. We want your reaction to what you saw out there in game two. I think there was a lot of good. And at the end of the day, we're more concerned about what happens when the first team is on the field in reality. Sure. That's who's going to play in regular season. But there's still a lot to clean up. And some of the guys from the first team in that run defense were still on the field when they were getting gashed by the backups of the Falcons. Can't have it. Devontae Freeman, it looked like if he wanted to and played a full game, could have run for 300 yards in this one. Can't have that. One guy who I thought I wanted to single out, one other guy in defense who I thought had a good game, Jamar Taylor. A couple nice pass breakups. Got them off the field.
He's another physical guy. He did.
Played physical. And Justin Gilbert, again, he needs to be more physical in the run game. They got to work on that, but he's out there to cover. And I thought coverage-wise, he did a pretty good job.
He did.
All right, we'll be back. CBD, your reaction coming up next.
RG3's got the snap. He's going to give Pryor a shot. Down deep right sideline. He's there. He caught it. He's in. Touchdown. RG3 to Terrell Pryor. 50 yards and a touchdown. A beautiful throw.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here. That was Jim Donovan on the call of RG3 to Terrell Pryor. 50-yard hose down for the Browns as the first team offense got in the end zone not once but twice in that one. We're going to go to the phone lines now. We got a lot of you. We got some sound we'll get to, but we want to get to you guys right now. 216-578-0850. Get your reaction on preseason game number two. Let's start with the venerable Jeremy in Akron. Jeremy.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's going on, bro? How are you doing?
I'm going to lay this out there before someone else beats me to it, but I'm starting to see the 2006 Saints and the Cleveland Browns this year. Let me lay out the comparison for you.
Sure.
You got a young offensive-minded coach that everybody wanted in the offseason. You got a quarterback looking to reclaim his career, become one of the best in the league. You got a bunch of young, unproven skill players, but a ton of talent there. Even at the running back position, the Saints had Deuce McAllister and Reggie Bush, one guy to match it up in, one guy to catch the ball out of the backfield. By the way, the Saints defense that year gave up 2,000 yards rushing and over 5 yards a carry.
That's the one similarity I don't think we want to continue, but after last night, it certainly looks like it might. But That's not a bad call. That was a team that had Marcus Colston come in there in his rookie season. Devery Henderson, Joe Horn was still hanging around at that time for that team. And obviously you talked about Deuce McAllister and Reggie Bush, who both were over 1,200 total yards that year at the running back position. Deuce more on the ground, Bush more in the air. That's an interesting one. And that was a team that was on a rise and ultimately did get itself to the Super Bowl. You had Drew Brees there in that season throw for 4,418 yards. It's amazing. Back then, 26 touchdowns seemed like a lot, but we know in today's NFL it isn't. But I do think that there are some similarities with this being a very offensive-minded football team that's going to need some time on the defensive side. I want to see a little bit more on the defense. I will tell you another guy who stood out to me, Spencer Drango, I thought had a good game. Austin Pastore had a good – the whole
Austin
line.
Austin Pastore, yeah. The line played
Greco
good.
Greco had a good game.
Greco, did you see Greco mash that safety?
Oh, yeah, when he came across the formation from the right to kind of to the left. Yes. I like that. I think that that's a very interesting comparison, and I think, Jeremy, we would all be very happy if that, in fact, is the case. Nobody's going to bring me down today. I know there are issues, and this wasn't a team – this wasn't a team that I at any point thought was, you know, going to Super Bowl. I think, look, in the NFL, anything can happen, but we're trying to be realistic here. But I think to be a long-term successful team in the National Football League, you've got to be able to score the football. You look at the teams that are good, they can all score the football. And the Browns have not been able to do that for a long time. I think there is young talent here on defense. I think it's going to take some time to gel. The guys that I want to see elevate their games, for this team to be as good as I want them to be, it's last year's two first-round picks, both in the middle of their respective lines. Danny
Correct.
Shelton and Cam Irving need to step up their play, and if they do, I think it's going to help a lot of things on both sides of the football. Though you can't tell me, you can't convince me that this offense is going to be pretty darn good. Let's go to Dan and Hershey Pot. Dan.
Go Browns.
Go Browns.
I want to report some unusual seismic activity in Hershey, Pennsylvania. I was watching Game Pass this morning. I couldn't see the game last night.
Uh-huh.
And watching the first quarter, I felt the earth move under my feet.
Oh, I thought Mo Pedman was in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Well, maybe he was, but oh, it looks like we might have a quarterback.
It certainly does.
What
look
a concept.
That way. It is helpful. It's useful in National Football League, it turns out. And I think one of the great things about what Hugh Jackson does is he figures out what his quarterback and what his players do well, and he asks them to do what they do well and doesn't ask them to do what they don't. And I think that it was awesome to see the sliding, the running, the protecting of himself. And just, I'll tell you what, we saw multiple things, and that's what you were getting at. We saw quick bang, bang, bang reads at times. And then we saw smart scanning of the field and delivering the ball with great touch. He throws a great
How about Duke into the flat
late
as well?
He throws the deep pass, man. He throws the deep. He drops it in a bucket, baby.
He drops dimes. Yes, look out.
But I have one real important thing, guys.
Sure.
I mean, like Hugh Jackson has his guy. I got my guy.
Who's your guy?
So the thing I want to discuss is I think it's we got to come up with a nickname. I got a couple of suggestions. And my guy is Carl Nassib.
Yes.
I'm loving this guy, man. I just love the screw loose, like, ranting on the sideline. I mean, I think it's either got to be Mongo, you know, so they gotta like put a collar around him and strap him to the bench, you know, to protect other people, or the Kraken. It's got to be Carl Mongo Nassib or Carl the Kraken Nassib. Then we release the Kraken on the other team.
I mean, he is a guy that has been, you know, yes, he was released, he was unleashed, and he's fun to watch. And I'll tell you what, for being crazy Carl, he's a little bit of a different kind of guy, self-admittedly. The guys on the team love him. When he came over to the sideline after that, they were loving him.
I've said that before. I actually might have said it last night on the postgame show, is while you might have earplugs, you know, with him going, you know, ape on himself to get pumped up before the game, the tempo with which he plays and the urgency that he plays with and how productive he has been through two preseason games, you have to love it because he's going to help you win football games.
Yeah. Hey, you're right, and right now, guys on the defense that are gonna help you win football games, you like those guys right now because that's the side of the football that right now you've got concerns about. I mean, the offense, I think you got a taste of what it could be, and that certainly is exciting. Let's go to John in Cleveland now. John, welcome.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Only thing I'm wondering about, I like the offense and the direction they're going.
Yep.
But one of the things I was wondering about, defensively, I'm thinking defensively, we drafted players to get up the field and get after the quarterback. But I'm wondering, like, when we ask Danny Shelton to lose weight. We don't got people that can hold their point of attack. I wonder if that's hurting the team, and we don't have linebackers that have gap control and can just hit gaps and just close down gaps. So you think all this losing weight for Danny Shelton is actually hurting him as opposed to helping him?
No, I don't. I mean, both short-term and long-term, I think that, you know, there's not many 350-pound nose tackles in the league, and I think for Danny Shelton to want to play more and stay on the field, it's a good thing for him to lose the weight. I think it's just a constant, you know, reiteration of being physical and being more aggressive as opposed to sitting back on his heels, as I mentioned earlier, and kind of reading where the plays go. And the more decisive that Danny's going to be, the more decisive the linebackers can be. And the one thing we have to really understand is, you know, last night and that zone scheme – and you pointed out kind of like in your numbers segment, it was the number seven offense in the NFL in 2015. So Atlanta's very good at what they do. And I think we saw Kyle Shanahan make our offense look very, very good and productive in that zone scheme. And so for these guys, it's different. And I thought last night we were skating a little too much side to side. And the one thing I'm interested to see is when we line up against a power football team, how do we react?
Yeah.
You know, are our linebackers going to come across undersized? Are we not going to be penetrating gaps? Because if you don't, you're going to get gashed in a power run scheme.
Yes. And we don't want to see that. We've saw enough of that yesterday from the Browns. One more caller, and then Sir Andrew Gribble will join us. But keep calling up. We'll take calls with you guys. It's the reaction day. We want to get it out there and get everybody's take. Baron in Cleveland, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going today, gentlemen?
Good, man.
I'm sorry about the background. It's a big one, but I saw you guys were so dead on today. I'd say I agree 120% with everything you named. I was talking to my relatives and fans this morning, and everything you all named, Nassib. I even thought that the other linebacker, Wright, was a better alternative than Mingo. I wonder about his status, the way that the coach looked at him when he played on defense. He just looked like this your last leg. 6'4", 240. I'm 6'2". 260, and I play football also, and I don't understand why they got such a small guy in there at that linebacker. Another thing, the offense was great, but that defense, I'm going to tell you something, that Shelton, in my opinion, he needs help. This defensive scheme of the 3-4, what really happening for fans that don't understand football, when you play the 3-4 defense, what you're really doing, you're taking a 320-pound tackle off the field and replacing him with a 240-pound line. We already know our linebackers are undersized. So I think right now that they got to – I don't think he will, but we got to look at going to a 4-3 defense because that's going to put more weight on the field, and it's harder to push that weight back. I just want to get you all intake on that.
Appreciate it. And I think we kind of saw them try that at times last night where they used Agba stood up sometimes, but also was a fourth guy on the field with the hand down. I don't know what the answer is. By the way, Trucker Dave says the Kraken was Greg Hardy's nickname, so we can't give that to Carl Nassib.
No, we cannot.
For obvious reasons. So, nope. Kraken is out. I like Crazy Carl. Nasty Nassib.
Yeah.
He's just good. Just keep making plays. I like it. Whatever he wants to do. Anyway, we appreciate the calls, as we said. Sir Andrew Gribble in studio next. 216-578-0850. Call us up. And we'll keep talking about this game. I think, again, a lot of good to take away, certainly on the offensive side of the ball. We're going to score the football, folks. This is going to be a Browns team that will be fun to watch. Might turn out to be like that Denver Nuggets team under that Loyola Marymount guy. Was that Paul Westhead? Was that his name? Or Paul Westfall?
Yes.
Grims, you remember? Westhead? Paul Westhead. Michael Adams was averaging like 26 points a game on that team. It might be like that, but we're going to be fun to watch on offense. I'm excited about that. That's what gets me going. That's what fires me up.
Can't stop anybody.
We'll see.
But we're going to score.
We'll see. Right now, let's just focus on the good. We were honest about what was not so good.
We were.
I mean, twice as many offensive plays, twice as much time in possession, almost triple the first downs. Not good.
No.
Over 200 yards rushing, nearly 500 yards offense. Not good. Bad. Over 6 yards a play. Bad. But we averaged 6 yards a play, too. Good. Well, back with more CBD right after this. Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Skirra, Matt Wilhelm, joined in the Dog Bowl here in Berea by Sir Andrew Gribble. Now, we'll continue to take your phone calls, 216-578-0850, but we also want to have Gribbs take first. So, Gribbs, the floor is yours.
Well, you know, I think encouraged significantly by what we saw on offense, not just from the big plays with – with RG3, Barnage, and Pryor. But, you know, you saw some consistent running out of this offense as well. As you were saying in the break, Crow looked really good. I liked it. I think his first carry, he, like, made a nice cut and went straight down the middle. I mean, he read the play real as well as you could. And then the thing I was talking about, Duke Johnson takes a pass and just starts plowing guys over. I think you're seeing a more physical version of Duke Johnson, which will help out this offense a lot.
He said that when he came in here, what he wanted to do this offseason was bulk up but keep his speed and his shiftiness so that he could run with more power. And I think we're seeing it.
Yeah, and I mean, and that was like a third and long that they weren't going to get anyways, but he turned it into like what would have been like a 5-yard gain into a 10-yard gain, got him closer and allowed Andy Lee to do work after that. I think the defense, there's just when you have those kind of numbers, just not a lot to love about that kind of performance, especially the first drive where the Falcons just, it looked like they were going off their script and made it look so easy going right down the field. But I can find some individual performances that I liked. I can like what I saw from Carl Nassib, Jamar Taylor, even a guy like Derek Kindred, who might not play all that much on defense this year, but is really like making the most of his opportunities. Yeah, he was always around the ball. I think that was good to see. So some good individual performances on defense, but you just wonder about this run defense. I mean, he talked about a post game. Teams are identifying it as a weakness, going right after it, and you want to compare. This is a brand new coaching staff, new regime, new everything. But you wonder about the players from last year. If there's the confidence against the run, these are players that haven't had much success against the run in recent years, and you want to see them start having that so it can be contagious for the rest of the season.
You talked about the good, you talked about the bad in regards to conceptually the run defense. But what are some of the guys that you thought didn't have the best night that really need to step their game up in this week against, you know, there in Tampa to potentially make this football team that were bubble guys going in last night?
Well, I don't even know if I would talk about bubble guys, but like the first thing is you just don't want to see what happened with Cam Irving and snaps. I mean, that's going to be a thing.
Can't happen.
It's something that if not for one of the dumbest penalties I've ever seen in an NFL game with that, the face mask on Robert Griffin III there that saved
that was a bad freaking sequence. Let's just call it what it was. You had that bad snap. Then you had the next play. You get the first down, fortunately, so it's still first and 10. Right. And then you get back there, and Malcolm Johnson's supposed to come down and pick up the end and whiffs, and RG3 gets enveloped. That's what happened. He was there, and it was like an eclipse, and then he disappeared.
It was just rough to see. And that was after two scoring drives as well. So you didn't end on the highest note there with the first team offense. So that was something. And it's just, you look on defense, I don't know. I saw Mingo make a couple plays, but then you wonder when in the game he's playing, what that means for him going forward. And I just think the second half, there wasn't a lot to like offensively, much at all. You didn't see.
Was there
the
a lot
same
to like in the second half?
No, I mean, in general, it just there wasn't a ton to like. And I think that the second half is full of those guys that are trying to make this team. So I almost think there's just opportunities left open. I think there could have been some maybe opportunities really seized and kind of rode that momentum. I thought it was interesting to see both Dominique Alexander and Tracy Howard were with the second team defense, but will we see that going forward? I mean, I think that I don't know if we saw enough to say they're definitely on that second team defense
sure.
going forward. I think that those spots are still very much in flux. So it'll be interesting to hear what Hugh has to say when they really look at the film, but it's just the missed tackles were just so problematic in both halves. But the second half, the run defense just got kind of out of control.
How about the battle that we have at kicker? Because, again, Murray put one through the upright, barely, and then Travis Coons misses an extra point. And now at this point right now, who has the upper level right now in regards to this competition, or do you still think they're even, and do you think it's going to get even more aggressive as we get into these next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I just wonder how you make it more aggressive unless they're just doing it more at practice, which you wonder if how much you can really squeeze in field goal work and in practice. But Murray's been, I guess he's made the long field goal in preseason, which is something that Coons is not. And then the missed extra point is just something that you can't have happen. And, you know, Hugh mentioned it in his opening statement pregame. So I think it's definitely a competition. I would think based on performance, what we've seen in the preseason so far, Murray has the edge, but I don't know if that's enough to change kind of the goodwill or anything that Coons entered the competition with, because I think he clearly was the front runner, but now you've got a guy in Murray who's made the most of his opportunities. As much as he squeaked that extra point in, he still got it in, and that was after a penalty, I believe, right?
It was. Yeah,
there's no doubt that Right now, Murray has performed better, and we'll see. I said going into that game, I said if Travis Coons gets an opportunity to make a kick, it's going to be the biggest pressure kick of his life at this point, given what Murray had put out there. And unfortunately, you miss it. And I'm as big a Travis Coons fan as there is out there, so I hope that he can find a way to do what he has to do here between now and the final cuts to be here. But it's certainly the competition is afoot. Let's go back to the phones. We'll take some calls together here on the show. And by the way, one other thing I wanted to say, and I don't know if you picked up on this or you, Matt, and as a player, one of the things I asked RG3, and I did a one-on-one interview with RG3 and a one-on-one interview with Terrell Pryor, and they're both on the Browns mobile app and clevelandbrowns.com. You can check those out. I've tweeted them out as well. But I said to him, it looks like you're having fun playing football again. And I watched enough Washington games, and you could tell there was a time, even when he was playing, that it wasn't fun anymore. And that I felt like he was swimming upstream, and that's how he felt about it. And he was having fun. I asked him, and I said, when's the last time you had fun playing football? And he goes, it's been a really, really long time.
Yeah.
And I think that matters. How much does that matter to a player?
It matters a ton, because it's the difference between coming to work, or it's the difference between coming and playing a game for a living. And I think RG3 has always said, you know, we could play, what, a kid's game for a king's ransom. And yes, he's made a lot of money, you know, but that there's not a lot of satisfaction that comes behind that money. So he'll live a great life and always think about, you know, what if or what could have happened. And I think last night, when the camera would pan to him after the prior touchdown, you know, there's a swagger and an aggressive nature, like a ha-ha, you know, moment for him. Like, I'm getting it back. I'm slowly getting it back. You saw him run over, just the rapport with his teammates, how excited he was to go see Gary Barnage, you know, after his touchdown. And I think he's exuding an excitement that I think Hugh Jackson exudes each and every day. And we're seeing that kind of come through in our quarterback.
I almost think Griffin liked the second touchdown pass a little more than that first.
That
window was a lot smaller. And I think it was good with him and Gary. We know how important Barnage is to this offense. And, you know, Barnage missed the first week or so of training camp, so the chemistry wasn't maybe on the same level as it was with Pryor. And then you have the interception in the previous game where it was clearly you don't even put it on one or the other. It was just kind of a chemistry issue with those guys with why that interception happened. So I think that was a rewarding feeling. And it was just good for, at this stage of the preseason, through two games, you want that first team offense to score. I mean, you want them to get on the board. And I think that to get on the board twice against the Falcons, which I believe both times they were still playing their ones on defense as well. So that's a step in the right direction to go into these joint practices feeling good about the offense going down to Tampa.
That's right. Can't bring me down today. Let's go to Blanca in Bay Village, our good friend Blanca. What's up, Blanca?
Gentlemen, love it. A boy last night, 7 years old, with a prior pass, jumped up and down like we just won the Super Bowl. So
that's awesome. It felt that way.
It did. And then defense, going to work it out. No problem. I wanted to go in a different direction. I noticed a lot, and I was telling Carter about gunners. And there's a lot of different names that I'm seeing coming down the field on special teams. You kind of talked about the kickers. With those position battles coming up in week 3, did anybody really stand out as somebody you see maybe taking over for some of our special teams players at this point?
I mean, Kindred, I think, is one that's going to make this team, first and foremost, as Andrew said, playing very well on defense, getting his name called on defense, and you take for granted that he's going to be, you know, a standout on special teams. I think Joe Schobert was a guy that I mentioned that I can't believe either on the radio broadcast or the television broadcast that I heard his name called once for anything, but he's going to be a guy because of being, you know, the first fourth round pick of this Sashi Brown era. He's going to make this football team. So he's going to be a guy. I think Scooby Wright, Dominic Alexander are two guys that are seeing the football field a lot that are going to have to not only understand what they have to do on defense. And I think Dominic Alexander is showcasing that by moving up from the threes to the twos, but he's going to be a guy that when given an opportunity, he's not gassed because of playing preseason defense and special teams. He's going to loaf or take a rest. He's got to be able to go all in for both defensive and special team snaps to make this football team.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, too. I think we saw Kirksey make a heck of a play on special teams. Even though his snaps have gone up, I think he's still going to be a mainstay on special teams. Ricardo Lewis was out last night with the injury. He's someone that's been used a lot on special teams. And then another player who's usually on the opposite end of special teams but made a great play was Raheem Mostert, flying down the field and making a tackle. So I think he's a guy that is, you would think at this point, is in great position to make.
I agree. I agree with that.
Both from what he's done as a running back and as a returner. It's just when he does kickoff return, there's just something about him when he sees the lane Yeah. And he, you know, it seems like he always makes the right read, and he makes the most out of it, even if it wasn't going to turn into something. He gets you to the back to the 20-yard line. There's no dancing. He takes the most direct route and gets there in a hurry, and I think that's all they need out of that position.
I think you're right about that. Now, I do think Terrell Watson helped himself last night running very
some
physically.
Hard running. He, but it's almost like I don't know if they're directly competing against each other because they're so different.
Right. Well, it's just a matter
I wonder if he's competing on if you're backs. Yeah, if you're going to carry four, I think that's the fight that Watson is waging.
Well, because if Terrell Watson, I mean Terrell Watson and Malcolm Johnson, you know, I know that one is a fullback and one is actually a tailback, but can you teach a Terrell Watson kind of like fullback esque principles in those few times that it seems we're actually going to use a fullback?
Yeah, it's not
you know,
that
in
often.
This Hugh Jackson offense, where you can again, you keep a guy that you knew Hugh Jackson liked. You're getting some of the best football out of him right now, especially after last night. He ran hard. He ran with a purpose, ran through some arm tackles. And yet Malcolm Johnson, as you said, he's not making a bunch of plays on special teams. He's not out there on offense a lot to begin with. And then when he was, you highlighted not a highlight, you know, a great play, one of the bad plays of when he was in there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Let's get one more call in here while we've got Sir Andrew. Let's go to Oregon. Steve's on the line. Steve, welcome.
How you guys doing today?
Good, man.
Great.
Yeah, football's back. We got to love that. You guys have said everything about offense, and you know, we appreciate seeing a quarterback that actually looks like a quarterback. I had a question for you about the defense. It seemed to me, you know, Matt brought up they looked a little flat-footed, a little slow out there, but, and you know, I agree with that. I'm wondering how much of this issue we're having, particularly on the rollouts and the stretch runs, you know, with our guys being out of position, you know, based on the schemes and the plays that Horton's calling. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of guys getting, you know, blocked right out of the play or you know, just missing. You know, we saw a lot of arm tackles because they're slightly out of position. It almost seems like the calls are putting them in a bad spot. So I wanted to get you guys' take on that, and I'll just hang out and let you guys talk.
I mean, that can be true. And I'll be very honest, and I'll share something about, you know, my career is the one thing that a lot of these, as young as we are as a football team, and I think this goes to show for Xavier Cooper and Danny Shelton and these guys who are even in their second year, they're still very young in their NFL career. When you play college football and you're a great college football player, and especially coming from some of the schools like Penn State, like Washington, like Iowa for Christian Kirksey, you're not blocked an awful lot. Because you're a superior talent, you're coached at a superior school, and you have got a great team, and in some cases, no one can really match you from a, you know, kind of like a talent standpoint. At least I felt that way at Ohio State.
Sure.
And what happened for me, and it was a very eye-opening experience from a linebacker standpoint, but you can say this about anything, is I wasn't blocked an awful lot at Ohio State. So guards weren't getting up on me an awful lot at Ohio State. And then you get drafted to the NFL and guards are in your face almost every other play. And you go, what am I supposed to do now? And you see, you're right. You see guys a lot of times. And I think in last year's schemes, it's what I didn't like about it is guys are going to take the path of least resistance. Would you rather go through the wall or would you rather walk around a stone wall? Well, I'm going to walk around that stone wall. Well, in this defense, if my gap is on the front side of that stone wall, in this case, I got to go through it, which means there's got to be contact. You've got to press a guy out. You got to shed a block and get over to your gap. You can't always backdoor and go around that wall. And I think what we're seeing is, you know, in some cases when Nassib gets a guy on him, it's like you're like Velcro because you've never been blocked like this ever before since you started playing football. And all of a sudden it's big boy football and it's a little bit of an eye-opening experience. And until these coaches can, you know, drill and drill and drill and really reenact these live game scenarios of getting guys off you, and it starts to click of how you get a guy off you, and you're not caught looking in the backfield as Danny Shelton sometimes does. Danny Shelton standing with a slight bend in his legs, you know, latched onto an offensive lineman. I believe Danny can shed that block, but 335 pounds, 135 pounds, it doesn't do us any good. You know, so there's got to be a forcefulness to it, and you've got to be, you know, again, very deliberate in regards to getting to your gap. And I think that is something that is, you know, attention to detail that these coaches are probably preaching, that some of the players are just trying to get by on being great players right now, not great players in the NFL.
Yeah, and I will say, locker room last night, it was universal, even including Hugh Jackson. The problem last night was tackling. And I think that it was maybe it seemed like on those stretch pass plays where, you know, the Falcons had some wide open looks, especially that first play of the game to Tammy. But from a running perspective, I didn't see players completely out of position. I just saw missed tackles. And I think Kirksey, Shelton, Hugh Jackson all echoed that sentiment. That it'll be interesting. It sounded like Hugh wanted to count the missed tackles. Maybe we'll hear that on the teleconference today. It just seemed like that was something that he was going to identify looking at the film today.
No question. Let's go. One more caller. We got Iron Will, our good friend. What's up, Iron Will?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I want to comment on the fan experience for just a minute on last night and then get to the game. I was there. I love having the pregame show out on Dog Pound Drive. I don't know if you guys like it sitting out in that heat, but as a fan, I enjoy seeing you guys out there.
Yeah, we do. We get the TV out there as well.
I get a kick out of that. As a fan, I love seeing that, hanging out for a few minutes, get Wilhelm wave at you a little bit, say hi. That was cool.
Yeah, see you, buddy.
And then the other thing is we have Wi-Fi now at the stadium, and that worked very well also. That is a new development, and it worked well. I signed in all free, all good. As for the game, very excited about RG3. What a beautiful motion. He throws that 50-yard pass to Pryor like it's nothing. He just flicks the wrist, and it just drops it right in the bucket. Pryor made it look easy on his end, so you got to be excited about the speed and the athleticism that those two bring, not to mention Coleman and Gordon compared to last year's team. Reason for optimism on that side. And then the defense, well, like you said, it's a bit of a pinball game out there this year. There might be some high-scoring games, and I'm hoping that things get better because I do believe we have good coaching and they know what they're doing. So
yes.
Hopefully they can get these players to figure it out and stop thinking and just do.
That's what we want to see, certainly on the defense side of the ball, but I agree with you. Might be some shootouts. Did you hear what I said earlier, Grimms, that maybe we might call First Energy Sam the OK Corral. There'll be some shootouts this year.
It'll be a change of pace. I think that'll be good. And it's something we didn't even, like, mention, but I think to see the designed runs out of RG3 adds a completely new element to the offense, especially when you can get him in positions where he's not going to have to deal with contact. That just throws everything.
It just throws
a defense off balance when the threat is there.
And what it does now that it's out there, it does two things. They're going to take a second now to make sure RG3 doesn't have the ball, which gives Crow a little bit of an extra jump and the lineman a little bit of an extra jump on the linebacker. So just showing that should make the ground game more effective, which ultimately then makes when he decides to keep it in the read option more effective, much like Russell Wilson does in Seattle.
And guys, even furthermore, is when you can take the top, when you have guys that can take the top off of the defense, you're going to see a lot of
three.
You're going to see 7-man boxes consistently, and then you got to have then you add the zone read aspect to what you do. You get guys looking at the wrong. You got DBs got to play the wide receivers, so you are not fitting in the run game. And then it's basically big on big up front, and you put doubt in their mind. And as you said, RG3 can take it around the edge for 20 yards, or Crow can run through a defensive end's arm tackle. If he, you know, if he's kind of have a little doubt in his mind,
and
he's
breaking
correct.
More tackles.
Yes.
You can see he's running harder as well. I mean, there's going to be a time, hopefully, health being what it is and off the field things being what they are, that there's going to be a time where Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman, Gary Barnage, and Terrell Pryor are going to be on the field together. And you got to imagine Terrell Pryor is going to see a lot of single coverage in that situation.
How about this? How about Pryor, Gordon, Coleman in a cluster, Barnage on the backside flex, and you motion out Duke?
Who's going to get one-on-one on linebacker. And they did motion that out yesterday, and he did get the linebacker. But I think that they either had scouted well and they knew the slant was coming. Like, if he had an option route to go back outside, I think it would have been fine.
I think a lot of times he does have an option. He just might have been a bad read on Duke's account.
Just going for the slant. They tried to get it in there. They could not do it. Sir Andrew, thank you very much. Obviously, lots of coverage coming still over the weekend here. CleanBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app. What can people check out? What can they dig their teeth into?
Wait, we have a ton of post-game coverage, even advancing it even more. Huge teleconferences today. Back on the practice field Sunday. Much needed day of rest coming tomorrow for ClevelandBrowns.com contributors.
Yes, indeed. Good. Glad you will get that. Of course, Sunday, though, we'll catch you on Dog Pound Report. Gribbs, no rest for the weary Sir Andrew Gribble. All right, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.